at the back of my mind, I think my expectation was that I've got a decent degree, English, I'm from a decent university. I'm going to be fine. I kind of picture myself working maybe in PR or marketing. I'd have decent pay, and my friends would be in London doing the same thing, and everything would be fine. I didn't think I would struggle to get a job or anything like that. But yes, the reality was very different.
Okay, we are recording.
We are the voice of the under 25s.
I'm currently shut myself in a toilet.
How on earth do you become a lollyologist?
The bag with my blood in it. My blood.
Our stories, what we think, the truth.
And how long have you been sort of on the streets? On and off for a year.
We got told that he was killed in a motorcycle accident.
If we can't create a ginger army to take over the world, then we can at least lobby the government for tax-free sun cream.
Podium.me. This is your platform.
Graduating, basically jumping into the terrifying world of real life. Listen to these stories about what people have done once they've thrown their hats and had those embarrassing photos taken with a bit of paper that doesn't really mean anything.
So I went to the University of Manchester, and there I studied English, linguistics and literature. Had a really great time at university, but didn't think about leaving university till quite late on. I didn't really think about what I was going to do with my life after I'd graduated, which is quite a bad thing considering the whole point of university is to help you, give you that extra bump up when you come out into the real world. But I was just too preoccupied on having a lovely time. So when I did end up leaving university, I was thinking, right, what am I going to do? And I'd done a bit of student radio. I thought that was really good fun. It was really challenging. It was quite scary, but I enjoyed it. So maybe that's what I'm going to pursue. That was the extent of my thought process, actually, just because it was fun. So because I didn't go down like the conventional, like kind of structured route of a lot of my friends did. A lot of my friends did graduate schemes or something similar. So they had like, a structured training period and then went into something, which paid and there was progression and they knew what they were doing. So because I didn't do that, I've had a variety of weird places to work. I mean, I've worked for a company where you weren't allowed to have water bottles on the table, on the desk where you're working. And you weren't allowed to put your coats on the back of the chairs. You had to like hide them away in this cupboard. And you also, apparently I heard this like pretty much on kind of near to the end of my time there. There was one colour that you weren't allowed to wear. It was banned, but no one knew what colour it really was. But they just knew there was a colour that was banned. So that was pretty strange. I also did some time with a community radio station where they were just so wonderfully chaotic. They text me and give me about an hour's notice and say, right, can you cover the radio station from 9 at night to 11 at night? You've got 2 hours of airtime to fill live. And they would just say the keys under the mat. So I'd turn up, unlock the radio station and have to literally talk with no preparation for 2 hours. But these weren't paid. So I was finding it really hard to find something that actually paid me money so I could live off something. So I thought, right, next move would be to find a job, just a stopgap job that paid me some money while I figured out what my next move was. And through a friend of a friend, I ended up getting a receptionist role at a high-end car dealership in the middle of London. So my role was to sit up in the showroom, answering the phone calls to people who wanted to buy new cars or complain about their car or, something else, and then just be smiley and lovely to anyone who walked into the showroom. And this was great for the first 2 months. I worked with a great team of people. I was getting paid. It wasn't what I wanted to do, but it was just perfect for that time where I was trying to figure out what to do next. There was one gentleman who didn't like working on a Friday afternoon, so would make up different excuses and lies every Friday about why he wasn't going to be there. It might be a meeting the other side of London, or having to deliver a car miles out of London, so he couldn't be back in the office, which were all lies. He was just going to the pub or going to see a friend or something. and I would have to, all these customers walking in to see him, I would have to just go along with these lies and just, you know, tell them, yeah, no, he's not going to be in, and just fingers crossed that no one noticed. We had a manager who I think definitely suffered from a mild case of a OCD or just extreme tidiness. And in the customer loo, every morning would go in and fold the loo roll so the end of it was pointy. So it was like what you'd find, I don't know, maybe like in a really smart hotel or something. Which is fine, that's really great, I'm sure customers would appreciate that. But none of the customers used that loo. So every morning he'd turn the loo roll into triangles, and I was the only one that used the loo. So I got this, you know, star treatment for absolutely no purpose whatsoever. And it was extremely busy, so some of the days I would be answering the phone pretty much non-stop, as in the calls would just back up and back up. And I was answering the phones, and I got so bored of constantly, you know, good morning, Kate speaking, good afternoon, Kate speaking, that sometimes I'd do a funny accent and see if people would notice, or sometimes I'd sing it and see if anyone notices, and most of the time people didn't, and it was quite embarrassing when people did and they caught me out. So there's nothing wrong, like I had no issue with the role, there's nothing wrong with being a receptionist, it's just not what I wanted to do. And sooner or later, like 2 months turned into 4 months, and 4 months has turned into 6 months, and suddenly I'm like, oh my goodness, I've been here 8 months, this is just meant to be a temporary thing. I started to feel like quite trapped, and it was just horrible feeling that I completely drifted off course to what I intended to do in the first place. So I'd set out, you know, leaving university, being like, right, here goes, I'm going to get a job in radio, it's all going to be great. And it had been going so well. I did internships in some really great places. I did an internship at the BBC as well. And then suddenly I was here answering phone calls to people who, you know, had a puncture in their tyre and were yelling me down the phone. I was just had a moment where I was like, oh, I really need to sort this out. This is not what I intended for myself when I left university. So from that point on, I started, you know, reality was kind of hitting me hard. So I started applying for other jobs, anything I could find with the really weird variety of things I'd done within radio. And then suddenly I was working at a car dealership. So managing to twist that into a CV was a bit of a struggle, but it all turned out okay in the end, and I've managed to get a job with a radio advertising company. So today is my last day with the car dealership, and I'm going to miss the people loads, but I am not going to miss that telephone. I'm not going to miss rude customers, and I'm excited to be getting back on track and, like, you know, doing what I actually want to do. So I think in the future, I'd probably, if I find myself drifting off course again, I probably won't panic as much as I did, because it always turns out okay in the end, even if you can't really see it.
We all know what it feels like to have your dream job just out of reach. Our journalist Beth went to speak to someone who found her dream job, and it's not a job that many of us have heard of.
So, Moosh. Yeah. That's your nickname?
That's my nickname. Yeah, they gave it to me. They didn't pronounce my name.
And who are they? Tell me who they are.
A really great company called Licolix. They make natural healthy ice lollies.
Tell me a little bit about Licolix and what you're doing at Licolix.
Yeah, well, Licolix, they're making really, really the greatest natural handmade ice lollies. And they make it with all fresh fruit, good ingredients, a little bit of sugar to get out the taste, because when lollies frozen, taste changes and just need a little bit, but it's really good.
Tell me what your job is at Licolix.
The lolliologist.
That's probably the best job title in the world.
In the world, yeah. It comes from mixologist. They make the cocktails. I make the lollies. So yeah, that makes lolliologist. Yeah.
So talk me through what a lolliologist does.
Well, a lolliologist is basically coming up with all the new great flavors. We start with this massive brainstorm. Best it works if we just do it all together, like sit with each other and make up new flavors and get great ideas. Flavor testing, yeah. We do it all together, so we just have lollies with great taste going around, and then we give each other feedback, what do we need to change, and it's really cool.
So how do you come up with the flavors?
Well, first of all, you just start looking around in the market. What's there? What new flavors are there? Food is always on the move, always new things, and it's really great to work with new ideas, and you can get inspiration everywhere. So we just, start looking at that, and then we come up with some ideas, and we see which ingredients we need, and just work out a new recipe.
What's your favorite lolly flavor that you've created?
I have to say, it's not really a difficult question. We have one with banana, chocolate, and sea salt. It's the best. It's really good. It's like the perfect combination of like fruity, salty, and chocolate, which is always good.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
So when you're actually testing, okay, so not the testing when you've got the ice lolly made, but when you're making the ice lolly, how does that work? You're all in the kitchen. Well, how does it happen?
Well, we first start with a recipe. Just get some, like, it's not really refined yet. Just see, like, what do we need and how much do we think we need. And just start testing that out. And we do on smaller scale the testing, like one or two lollies. So we can freeze them in a lolly machine and then get them out tasting. And then it's basically, seeing how it worked out. And on forehand, we also look into, like, when you use different kinds of fruit, it changes when you freeze it, or color changes, or what do we need to add? So if you work with avocado, you have to add some lemon.
Can you tell us why?
Yeah, because it doesn't turn, like, brown.
Ooh.
Yeah, the lemon keeps it fresh and green.
So
those are, like, the little tricks you need to know, and you go forehand, so you don't have to, like, you don't spill one testing round. You just know it is on forehand, and you try it out.
How did you get this job? How on earth do you become a lolliologist?
Well, Google was a good help. Yeah, I needed to get an internship abroad for school. And I just started looking everywhere. Like, you have to. It's really hard to find something that suits you, fits you, and you really like. I just came across a website that was, like, under construction, and I clicked a bit and I got to a Lickalix page, and it's like, yay, this is awesome, I like this. So I just sent them a letter, and after a few weeks it got back to me.
What did your letter say?
Well, that a bit of about my study course and who I am, and that I really love to work with food. It's my one true big passion. I love it, and I like to be really creative, but also I really take my responsibilities. I can work seriously. Yeah, that I really want to work for them. And I really thought it was cool to make some great new flavors. It's really cool to go into a store and see Lickalix there and like, hey, I made that lolly. That's awesome. And that's really, and it's really good to see how you get from an idea to like one lolly.
And what about seeing someone eating your lolly?
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, and we've been to a lot of events, and it's really cool to just stand there, like, being incognito, and see somebody get a lolly, and like, this is really good, and you're like, yay, I made this! Yeah, that's really cool.
Would you ever want to go up to them and be like, hi, I'm the lollyologist?
Well, it would be very modest. Well, everybody works really hard, so, like, they got all of them good ideas, and yeah, it's really great. We had an event where we made a bit of kind of crazy flavors, but they turn out really good. So like sweet corn with a bit of salt. It's really insane. It sounds crazy, but it was really good actually. Like, you maybe not order it and eat a whole lolly, but for the event it was really great and really awesome to try it.
So you were telling me about the salted sweet corn lolly.
Oh yes.
And I want to know more about that.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a crazy thing to try out. It's just basically a lot of sweet corn, like, smashed up together, mixed it, a bit of salt in it, some sugar, and that's it.
And that's
basically it. Yeah.
And so how on earth do you think that sweet corn is going to be a good lolly? How do you come up with that idea?
Corn is great. Like, put it on the barbecue, and, like, it's really good with some butter and salt, like, a lot of sea salt. It's the best combination, salt and sweet. So, that's how we came up with it. Like, basically, seeing inspiration and everything and just try it.
Talk about your story.
Where do I start?
What was the question? Have you not heard about this?
No.
Oh, okay, I'll go into it.
I just couldn't care less.
Don't worry, I completely agree with you.
Oh, that's actually that's a weird one.
What am I going to say? Nah. That's really judgmental, innit? And basically, that pretty much sums it up.
Podium.me.